fate of our planet and ourselves. This is a time of great danger, but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos and our place within it.
Hello, and welcome to episode 6 and part 2 of Electricity. In this episode, we're going to talk about a few things. The first one we're going to talk about is current. Then we'll talk about voltage. We'll then talk about resistance. And last of all, we're going to start introducing the concept of circuits. Now, the circuits part is something that we'll leave for the next episode. So let's get down, crazy kids, and start talking about current. What is current? From the last episodes, we talked about current as being the flow of electrons through things like wires. We talked before about insulators, that's things like wood and plastic, should say some plastics. But basically, let's talk about metals for now. So, current, we can think of it as a flow. Think about a river that's carrying a little bit of water in it. Now remember, electricity and water don't mix, but we use it as a sort of an analogy. Now think about the water flowing through that river. Now the first concept we're going to talk about is a thing called current. Now we define current as the amount of coulombs per second. So if you're stationary on the banks of the river and you're looking straight across the river and you could count all the molecules of water that go through per second, that would give you the amount of current through that river. In the same way, we think about the electrons as the number of coulombs that go in there per second. Now remember that we don't talk about electrons or the single charges traveling through because they're really too small. We talk about bunches of charges, and we've given those bunches of charges a name. We call that a coulomb. So current, I, is the same as the number of coulombs divided by the time that you're there watching it. So for example, if you're seeing 3 coulombs in 3 seconds, 3 divided by 3, that is the current of 1 ampere, or amps, as we tend to call them a little bit more colloquially, let's say. An amp is the amount of current that flows over a particular time, in other words, per second. Now, it's very important to understand that those coulombs, we're not looking at the energy that they're carrying. We're basically just looking at the number of coulombs that are passing past our eyes every second. We'll talk about the energy that those electrons have a little bit later on when we get to voltage. Now, remember when we were getting ourselves zapped with the Van de Graaff generator? We talked about a small amount of current that each one of those coulombs was carrying a lot of energy. That was a low current, high voltage. Now let's get our head around what voltage is. The voltage is a measure of the amount of energy that each one of those electrons is carrying with it. In other words, how energized each one of the electrons are. In the Van de Graaff generator, we found a small amount of current was actually given as the zap. But the only reason why we feel that as such a shock, it's not because there's lots of those electrons going through, it's because each one of those electrons that is going through your body is highly charged. So they tend to give you a bit of a zap. They let you know that you shouldn't really make jokes with electricity. So voltage is the amount of energy each one of those coulombs is carrying. So voltage hereby is the number of joules divided by the number of coulombs that we have. Now that gives us voltage. Now voltage is a little bit more subtle than that, because I often talk about voltage as the need or the want for those electrons to want to get to zero voltage or to get to lower voltage. You find that the higher the voltage, the more the need for those electrons is to go into the zero voltage. In Spanish we call that ganas, the want to get to that zero voltage. That is why when we get a really, really high voltage, electrons will actually take the desperate steps to actually jump through air and arc. Now remember, it's roughly around about 500 volts per centimeter of air. So you can imagine a 10 centimeters park, how many volts there are. I'll let you do the maths for that. Now, these two concepts are really, really important. One being the current, in other words, the number of electrons that go past the wire, and the number of volts. In other words, how energized each one of the electrons that is going past your eyes is. Don't forget that this is a very important concept, particularly when we talk about electric circuits. And later on in the next episode, we're going to talk about Ohm's law, which is a really, really fun law. Now, at this stage, it's important to talk about resistance. What is resistance? Well, resistance is basically a tool or a device that we use to dissipate some of that voltage, some of that energy. Now, sometimes, many times, the resistors will dissipate energy in the form of heat, therefore taking away the voltage of those electrons. Now, there are a few subtle things that happen with resistors. The obvious question is, why do we need resistance? Why do we need to get rid of that energy? Well, if we didn't have resistors and we just connected a circuit from the positive terminal to a negative terminal at relatively low voltages, you could actually melt a wire, because suddenly the electrons are just going through having to leave those packages of energy to the wire, and often the wire will get hot and will eventually split up. Now, sometimes that can be of benefit. And that's where we use fuses. A fuse is a very thin piece of wire that can only sustain a certain amount of current. And we use that traditionally, before the invention of the safety switch, to protect ourselves against electrocution. So in your house, you would have a whole patch of fuses. And what that would do is, if anybody, in the event that they got electrocuted and the current went up beyond the safety range, those wires would be calibrated to break off at that point. So the fuse would blow and suddenly the circuit will be cut off. But we'll talk about the importance of resistors. Now, in order to use electricity, we need to dissipate some of that energy into more usable forms. The perfect example is your light bulb. Now, a light bulb uses electricity to dissipate some of the electrical energy into light. In your toaster, we dissipate some of the electrical energy into heat in order to toast our toaster. Now, traditional light bulbs weren't very good at all. In fact, they gave very little light for the amount of energy that they consumed. In fact, most of the energy in the traditional incandescent bulbs is actually in the form of heat. Not very useful to us, unless you're a chicken in a little incubator. Most of the energy in those incandescent light bulbs would be in the form of heat, not light. And that is why in recent times we've actually changed to the neon tubes and also the new light bulbs, which have a much better efficiency in transforming some of the electrical energy directly into light and giving off very little heat. Now, a light bulb or your toaster is a perfect example of a resistor. It gets electrical energy and transfers it to something else. Now, resistors come in all shapes and forms and sizes, and sometimes we don't actually use the energy. We just need to get a circuit to have the exact voltage that we require. So just before an item, let's say, we'll just put a little resistor to give us a 6 volts, which is what we need. And in order to get us exactly 6 volts, we'll need to get a little resistor before the electrical energy gets into there. So a resistor is basically a device that will transform electrical energy into other forms of energy, such as heat, such as light. And I guess one of the subtle nuances of resistors is they also tend to reduce the flow of electricity. Now, to give you an example and an analogy, let's think about the latest Hobbit premiere. There's a lobby full of people, all waiting to get into the cinema. So suddenly, the ushers of the cinema will open 2 doors, one which is a double door and one which is a single door. Now, let's pretend for a second that all the people waiting in the lobby are basically electrons that are charged with a voltage of really wanting to see The Hobbit. Think about the doors as the resistors. one which has a low resistance, a double door, and one which has a higher resistance, which is a single door. Now, what do you think is going to happen? As soon as the doors open at the same time, a lot of the people are going to travel through the double doors because it has a lower resistance. Remember what we said before about the lightning? Lightning or electricity always travels in the path of least resistance. So most people would see the double door and say, yep, that's my way of getting into the cinema, whereas other people might find themselves a bit closer to the single door and actually take their chances. Now remember, as people walking through the door, they'd be losing energy into bumping into each other and all sorts of friction will be happening, a lot of noise, a lot of elbowing. So that is how the energy, the walking energy, would be dissipated to other forms of energy such as friction, noise, the odd broken nose, the odd black eye. But you get the picture. The electrons, the people, are going to mostly travel through the double door because it offers less resistance. The single door will have some takers, but you won't see the flow of the electrons through that door, or the people, let's say, as much as with a double door. And that's one of the effects of resistance. The higher the resistance, the lower the current that will go through it. And I hope that analogy hasn't confused you too much. Now the next thing we're going to talk about is ohmic and non-ohmic resistors. In order to think about ohmic and non-ohmic resistors, it's important to think about a set of axes. The one that goes north, would call that the current or the amount of current. The one that goes from west to east, the axis that's horizontal or the x-axis, we'll call that the voltage. Now an ohmic resistor is what we call a perfect resistor. And let me be quite honest here, there is no such thing as a perfect resistor, but for all intents and purposes, for the purpose of calculations, and for the purposes of learning about things, let's just for a second think that there is such thing as a perfect ohmic resistor. What you would find is that an ohmic resistor has a perfect straight line, in other words, the y equal to x line, or a line that goes at 45 degrees or 30 degrees, but basically in a straight line, across the two axes. Starts at zero and starts heading northeast all the way up in a straight line. Now later on when we talk about Ohm's law, you'll see how that actually all fits together. A non-ohmic resistor, which is pretty much just about every resistor in the world, or maybe not everyone, every resistor, but for superconductors and all these other weird things, are what we call non-ohmic resistor. The profile is not so much a straight line, but a curve. For example, think about a diode. The profile for a diode would be a line that goes straight on the voltage, and then suddenly, at a certain voltage, it will just go straight up into an indefinite current, like infinite current. In other words, it doesn't have a straight line profile, it has more of a curved profile. An incandescent light globe looks like a tipped upside down parabola. It sort of looks like a little bit of a hump, and it starts off very sharply and then starts petering out at a certain current. There's not much more detail that it can go with ohmic and non-ohmic resistors. Let's just for now say that ohmic resistors have a perfect or a straight line voltage and current profile, just a straight line going northeast. On the other hand, a non-ohmic device, you actually have to get a graph to actually look at what current is available for a certain amount of voltage, or vice versa, at what voltage and what current will I require for that voltage. And that's usually what we tend to do with non-ohmic devices, is just to pretend that they're actually a straight line for all intents and purposes. Well, that was a bit confusing, but I had to get through it. The next thing to talk about in resistance is a thing called the resistivity. In other words, the characteristics of each metal in being able to conduct electricity. Now for this, I'm going to use a hose analogy. And for this, think that you have different types of hoses. All have the same cross-sectional area, in other words, the same thickness, but some of the hoses are rougher on the inside than others. Now, some hoses, the ones that are smooth on the inside, will be able to carry water more effectively. In other words, they'll be able to carry more water because suddenly on the inside is a bit smoother than the other hoses, which probably don't find it as easy to carry water. This is what we call the resistivity, and there are plenty of charts out there that give you a profile or a number for the resistivity of different metals. You'll find that copper is a very good conductor of electricity, so is gold. But we don't tend to use gold in wires, otherwise we'd get burgled every day just for our wires. So that is the first thing that determines your conductivity, or in other words, the resistance of say wires. Now, we've said before in the podcast that for all intents and purposes, we can consider wires to be resistant-less. However, that is not the actual truth. Even though the resistance of metals is really, really, really small, particularly when you're talking about small lengths of wire in your lab, once you get those wires to conduct over hundreds and hundreds of kilometers, then the resistance starts building up. In other words, even though each meter of that wire has only got a very small amount of resistance, once you put together 100 or 1,000 kilometers worth of that wire, then you start losing some of that energy into the resistance due to the accumulation of all those small resistances over a long distance. So the resistance of a certain length of wire will be the resistivity of that metal times the length of the wire you've got. But we've got something else that plays a part. In other words, if we think back to the hose analogy, what if I make the hose thicker? In other words, a higher cross-sectional profile. Think about a thinner pipe versus a thicker pipe. Which one do you think would be able to carry more water? Most of you would probably guess by now that the thicker pipe could carry more water because it has a higher cross-section. Well, the same sort of thing happens with electricity. The thicker the wire, the more ability to conduct electricity. So in other words, it tends to reduce the overall friction. So that's why the high voltage lines are usually made of pretty thick wire in order to reduce some of that resistance. But there's only so much you can reduce it. So, in summary, the resistance of a wire depends on 1, its resistivity, which you can get from tables, times the length of the wire divided by the cross-sectional area. Now, the conduction of electricity through long distances is a bit of a nightmare for many electrical engineers because they understand that they will be losing a lot of the energy that's created at the power plant somewhere along the lines in the power lines. So they get around it, and we'll talk about this more in year 12, by shifting how the energy is being carried. Now, I don't want to go into too many details, but I think it's probably worthwhile going into it just a little bit. If you think about the electricity being conducted along a great distance, what you want to do is to make sure that you don't have too many electrons that are going through, because that will affect the amount of power losses through that line. So what the electrical engineers do is they convert the line, the power that's, or the electricity that's being created at the plant, and they convert that to a high voltage, low current. In other words, they have fewer electrons going through the wires, but each one of those electrons carries a really high voltage behind it. Now, later in the course, we're going to talk about power, and I can actually show you via formulas how a low current, high voltage transmission across long distances can actually incur less energy losses. Well, I think it's been a very good enlightening episode. Once again, I think I'll finish off here, and next episode we're going to talk about the real stuff on electrical circuits.
This is a time of great danger, but our species is young and curious and brave. It shows much promise. In the last few millennia, we have made the most astonishing and unexpected discoveries about the cosmos and our place within it.